What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft, where we talk about starting pitching and only starting pitching. My name is Nick Pollock, and joining me this week, oh my gosh, it's Eno Saris. Eno, so good to see you.
Hey, good to see you too.
And we have another week of baseball. We have a full month, so we actually have like decent data at some level. We do see some guys changing a little bit here and there. It's kind of the fun time of the year where we see all the stuff from spring training show up and say, look, this is who we are. And then sometimes that fails us and they have to adapt. And we've already seen some of those adaptations. One guy, for example, like Garrett Crochet, throwing a changeup now. Good for him. He figured out a way to
back down a right-hander.
Yeah. Right. Against right-handers, which, by the way, I still think he should do. That's me. I think he should still throw opposite-handed sliders all the time. But he has a new changeup, and that worked out well for him. And we start to see those shifts for pitchers when they realize that they need to add something normally around this time in May. So that's incredibly fun. And I'm curious, Eno, what have you seen in the past week that is on your mind?
Well, you know, one guy that, you know, I've struggled to rank because he's a stuffmeister in a bad park. You know, I've gotten into some tiffs with people, for example, Brian Baio versus Hunter Green, and that I was overvaluing strikeouts and overvaluing stuff, and that Brian Baio was going to be better than Hunter Green. And I guess, until yesterday that looked like it might be true. I don't know if it was yesterday. It was earlier in the week.
It was a couple of days ago. The Baio went on the IL. Yeah.
And also Hunter Green had a great start this week. And, you know, I understand that, you know, his command isn't necessarily the best aspect of his game for Hunter Green. I understand that he has a small arsenal and that, you know, to some extent, his stuff plus is being really buoyed by his fastball and slider combo. Mm-hmm. But I thought, you know, going into the spring, I thought, hey, here's a guy who's adding a splitter and adding a curve, and that's exactly what I want him to do. And then I think what's happened is that he's shown us why he doesn't throw the splitter and the curve more. And that's just that while they are good pitches, also, again, for stuff plus, they aren't pitches he can command.
Right.
The splitter, the curve maybe, but all three of the splitter, the slider, and the curve, basically, you know, 10% worse than league average. Not even, that's even more, because 90 location plus is worse than 10% worse than league average.
Oh, so yeah.
It's those are really bad command grades.
Yep. And PLV doesn't like that slider. And that's mostly because
of the locations,
right? It's a 16th percentile PLV for all starting pitchers, sliders, Hunter Green slider. So that's pretty bad.
And can you separate that into stuff and location?
So we actually are doing that internally a bit. I can tell you that seeing a 17% swing strike rate on the pitch, and also a 80th percentile horizontal break on it with 63rd percentile velocity.
Yeah, so the stuff looks okay.
Right. That, yeah, this is very much rooted in its location, which is just all over the plate. I mean, super hittable stuff.
Yeah. And so, you know, the interesting thing about this, the start against the Rangers that he did so well on, was A, no walks, or mm-hmm. one walk in seven
yeah.
innings.
Sure. Yeah.
And B, one splitter.
One. That's it. Yeah, that was the only non-fastball slider.
Exactly. He slimmed it back down again, and he said, "I'm gonna slim this back down again and just be dominant as a two-pitch pitcher." I mean, we've seen Spencer Strider have long outbursts. This we've also seen Graham Ashcraft sort of struggle. One difference between Hunter Green and Graham Ashcraft, though, is mm-hmm. that the shape of Hunter Green's fastball is more platoon neutral.
Yes.
It is not absolutely a cutter.
Right. And actually, he changed it. He improved it massively. Hunter Green's four-seamer went from like a sub-15 vert to 17 this year.
Uh-huh.
That's a big deal. I mean, when I looked at Hunter Green entering the season, I saw, great, you have 93 mile per hour velocity, but below average extension, below average vert, and below average VAA. Like, this wasn't a good fastball, save for that velocity. And then you throw in the whole, hey, can you locate it well? And yeah. Now that you throw in the vert that is actually helping you, that changes a lot of things here.
I think that I am still upbeat about him. Mm-hmm. You know, here's the one thing that that occurred to me was, you know, once Walker Buehler told me that it's hard to get plus IVB when you average over like 96 miles an hour on a fastball.
Mm-hmm.
And his theory was basically that he said that the Dodgers told him that.
Oh, interesting.
And he also, his theory was basically like less time, you know, right. On the way to the plate. So I'm going to take, you know, four-seam fastballs here on Alex Chamberlain's board here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say you had to throw at least 100 of them. So mm-hmm. It's going to be mostly starters, I guess.
I'm just thinking off the top of my head, like Tristan McKenzie, Cutter Crawford, Nick Pivetta, Tobias Myers. These are not 96 mile per hour fastballs and higher. These are low 90s.
Yeah, let me see where I have to go to get Hunter Green on here. What's Green's Hester average?
Folly. His average is 98.
Oh, there he is, 98. Okay, so maybe I'm wrong. I mean, but there's a lot of relievers.
Yeah, sure.
Basically, so you know, above him at 98 with 100 is Robert Suarez, Ryan Stanek, Michael Kopech, Mason Miller. Now, all those guys have comparable IVB to him or better. Mm-hmm. Michael Kopech has 18 IVB and a 98.6.
Wow.
But when you start looking at just starters, first of all, you have to get all the way down to Mackenzie Gore at 96.8 to get the next starter.
Ah, Mackenzie Gore. Man, he's doing the thing. We talked about Gore before, but...
But he has 18.6 IVB on 96.
Yeah, he's got to locate that thing upstairs.
Luis Gil, 96.6, 15.9 vert.
Yeah.
Dylan Cease, 96.7, 18.1. So, you know, maybe there's been some sort of breakthrough in pitch design, or maybe I misheard Walker Buehler. Or maybe,
well, I mean, it explains the whole Dodgers thing a bit too.
They do seem to act a little differently.
Yeah.
Hunter Green, 98 miles an hour, basically 18 vert. It's a good fastball. Sometimes he throws it middle, but you know, middle, 98, 99. That's the whole sort of stuff versus command debate right there. Mm-hmm. It's like, yep. You know, you're going to be better off throwing middle, 99 than throwing middle, 91.
Absolutely.
And so I think we are in the middle of this, of a kind of a Hunter Green breakout. And I think the splitter and the curve will matter, but they'll matter a little bit more maybe on days where he just has the good command.
Sure.
He'll break those out. And it also just gives him options over the course of the season to kind of go to. So right now we basically have one bad start from Hunter Green, three dominant ones and two okay ones.
Right.
That's a pretty good ratio.
It's pretty good. So it's funny is, you know, I send this image of Bart Simpson writing on the chalkboard every year with Alex Fast being like, I will not draft a pitcher because they have a new pitch. And I mean, come on, we all heard the, oh my gosh, Hunter Green's got a new splitter and curveball.
And then he throws one.
Yeah, right. And it's, I mean, when I hear new pitches, if you are a guy who struggles to get good strikes or trying to limit the ICR, right? They like limit the hard contact and not, or if you're a two pitch pitcher, essentially, mm-hmm. you want a strike pitch, not a whiff pitch, right?
Yes, and that's what he didn't add.
Right. So what I was talking about with Bryce Miller is like, hey, I want you to throw a cutter. I don't want you to throw a splitter new. But if you are someone who is not getting whiffs, like I remember this amazing presentation that I split up with Alex Chamberlain at First Pitch Arizona back in 2019. He talked about Frankie Montas being like, he stopped throwing sinkers and threw splitters instead. And all of a sudden now he has a higher strikeout rate because he's throwing a pitch that gets swing strikes as opposed to a pitch that doesn't. And that makes a ton of sense. Right. Understand the guy who's adding the pitch and see if that pitch is a good thing for them or not. for Hunter Green, maybe there will be days that he has a splitter working in the pen beforehand. We hear that all the time from guys. I remember that was a thing with Zach Eflin being like, I'm going to throw my curveball if I have it pregame or not. And then the Rays are like, no, just do that all the time, regardless, please. Great. Thank you. But Hunter Green might be in that situation. Same thing with his curve. The curve, I think, is, I don't know. Have you heard? I mean, say for Zach Eflin, who was just using it more, a guy adding a curveball and then making it more than just like a show me pitch, right? I can't honestly think of a guy who did that. Like all of a sudden, no, has a big curveball and this is the thing now.
Yeah, it's usually, you see, I think one of the most common ones is a guy with the curveball adds a slider and then starts throwing the slider more than the curve.
Right, Glasnow, good example
Glasnow,
of that.
Glasnow, Freed.
Yeah.
There's a fair, Cease.
Yeah, I mean, Kershaw?
Yeah, Kershaw.
Right? Like, so curves are usually like mix-up pitches. And the sliders, they realize, oh yeah, sliders essentially the best pitch in baseball if it's done correctly, right? So it's rare for you to hear like, oh, adding a new pitch curveball. I mean, Strider, before he got hurt, wasn't really making that a big deal for him. I remember even Ian Anderson was trying to make his curveball a bigger thing. And there was like one day against the Rockies, he did well with it. And I was like, yeah, that's not going to last at all. Mm-hmm. So with Hunter Green, to me, what's exciting is that it's a better four seamer. And what he just did against the Rangers is he actually located the thing upstairs. I mean, he did a really good job with that. Its overall contact is much better this year. We're talking about a four seamer for Hunter Green that is traditionally in the 40 to 45 ICR range. And it's 30% this year.
And his heat map used to be middle on the force.
Yeah.
And he's just kind of gradually pushing that upwards.
Right. The high lock overall is still lower than last year for Green, but that's, I think, because of the earlier starts and less so of this last one against the Rangers. And what is the most interesting part, though, about that start? Hunter Green, this was on Saturday, April 27th. The full line, amazing. 7 innings, 0 runs, 1 hit, 1 walk, 6 Ks. We will take this all day. But he only had 6 total whiffs and just a 24% CSW in that time. Over 71 on the four-seamer whiff for Hunter Green.
Were there a lot of pop-ups?
I think so. That's why I think I'm getting at here is 13 balls in play, 13 outs, and 20 foul balls. And low hard contact on that. So I see this as you throw it up and you get more IVB on it. And those batted balls that would normally be good contact are not good contact. It might be something that isn't as whiff heavy because of that. Mm. But that's totally fine with me. I mean, I think everybody, when you see these electric high strikeout guys, but generally high hit per nines or high fly ball, home run fly ball rates, all day would just want to calibrate it just a little bit, you know, the other way. And it does look like Hunter Green's doing that. I hope it lasts. I'm not quite ready to say that the command is better, but the four-seamer vert is, and that's absolutely positive. How's
his season-long ICR? Because on Fangraphs, his hard hit rates per game don't look like the people hit him hard.
So hard hit rate is a little bit different. That is just, I think, saying above 95 miles per hour.
Right.
We do it with... ICR is calculated by barrels, solid, and flares plus burners. And that's just 30%. So his
is all right.
His are great this year.
I would say, I think that's there's an interplay of stuff and command, obviously, in a stat like that. But I would assume that because the stuff is so great, he should be in the zone as often as possible, I think.
Right.
Yeah. And so sometimes that means kind of aiming middle. The one thing that I would say on the curveball, 6 out of 13 have been in the zone. It's not terrible. It's not great.
It's a 54% strike rate, 27th percentile for curveballs. I mean, that's against 13.
27th percentile. Okay. Yeah. But of the ones he's gotten, 4 called strikes, 1 ground ball and a foul.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's like no one, it's not in the book.
Pitch.
Right. It's a 92% of the time he throws it early in counts. And I think he threw one of them.
He's trying to get freeze takes. He's trying to
get 100%. This is supposed to be Let's just hopefully get a strike out of this.
Oh, all of his actual curveballs in the strike zone have been 0-0.
Curveballs that Hunter Green has thrown, 12 of them, of these 13, 0-0 count, 0-1 count, 1-0 count, or 1-1 defined as early bias.
Yeah.
And then one of them was a 2-strike. And he did not get the strikeout.
But he didn't care because he probably got it later on a different
ball. Yeah, they swung at it. And, it was out of the zone and they swung at it, but it wasn't a strikeout. So.
Oh, they made contact?
It looks like it is because we have a 2-strike O-swing percentage, which is 100%. Oh. Put-away rate is 0%.
So probably a good outcome for him.
I guess it could have been a foul ball. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think the
curveball is more important to me than the splitter. Because it's more likely that he can command the curveball eventually.
Yeah.
Plus I don't know if he's going to throw it enough. A little better on it.
Like, I guess I don't have much faith in the curveball actually being that large of an impact. Mm-hmm. While I do see some games where it's, okay, I need the splitter today. I'm going to try it and I feel it. And it's going to take over a game at times. I can see that as a possibility. While the curveball just being like this, oh, hey, ta-da. And then the curtain falls.
He has a reverse split for his career. That's kind of surprising.
A reverse
split? Maybe because he doesn't throw as many sliders to lefties, and he just is super fastball. That's
possible. I mean, it does seem like, as you were mentioning before with Graham Ashcraft and Hunter Green, that Hunter Green has a more split neutral fastball.
Yeah.
It looks like to me that it's actually more sliders to righties, fewer to lefties, as you were saying.
Yeah. So more of his best pitch against lefties, I guess.
Yeah.
I another thing that you could just do is be like, hey, the guy strikes out 30% of the guys he sees. Like there's obviously potential here. And the big thing is, the biggest source of noise early in the season, the thing that we can't know right now and that actually the rest of his season hangs on is actually homers.
Yeah,
he's right now at a half a homer per nine. He's been at over a homer and a half per nine, before. So is he just getting lucky on the homers, or will, his, higher, let's see here, his higher zone percentage this year is his best zone percentage of his career. Will that, plus a few wrinkles like the curveballs and splitters, will that help him keep the home run rate down?
Definitely. He has more poor contact this year than before. His pop-up rate is a little bit higher as well in general.
I ascribe a lot of that to the zone rate more than anything.
Yeah. I would say the vert, honestly.
Yeah. And
that vert is a huge deal. I mean, this is overall in all pitches thrown, not just that four-seamer. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to see. I mean, to me, it's just the ideal contact rate just is plummeting so far. And that's really good. And I'm going to put credit to the vert on that one. And hopefully that sticks around. I'm actually kind of curious what you think about his teammate, Nick Lodolo. And I do want to go into that one, and we will after this break. So between Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo, it sounds to me like you're on the Hunter Green side. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I guess so.
Are you?
Yes. Okay. One thing I like about both of them, which is such a great foundation, is they both have plus fastballs.
Oh, interesting. Well, right, because of the horizontal movement of Lodolo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Although it is kind of hard to tell what Lodolo's fastball is.
Right, because it acts pretty much like a sinker. It has like 95th percentile horizontal movement, 90th drop, if I remember correctly with him. Actually, no, it is 97th drop and 99th horizontal. But this is because it's labeled as a four-seamer. Which shouldn't really surprise a lot of people because he is very much on the side of the ball constantly, is Lodolo. But
in the stuff plus model, it shouldn't matter if it's labeled a four-seamer or sinker.
Mm.
Because the fastballs are in their own
bucket. Yeah, that makes sense. For us, I'm comparing that to a sinker. His sinker, let's just say, all right, let's say we're classifying it as that. 90th percentile horizontal break and 81st in drop.
Yeah.
So that's wonderful.
Where they separate the two, the difference between his sinker and his four seam is 4 inches of vertical movement. and 1 inch of horizontal, like that could actually just be misreads.
Yeah, for us, it's the IHB versus IV. So the IHB in both is like 1.5, and then the drop is 4.6.
So I think that's really the difference,
is the drop of them.
The drop.
It could be a case. I mean, I used to do this. I used to, at times with my two seamer, physically push down on my finger on release. And of course, Alex is all about finger
pressure. And keep everything else the same,
basically. Right. So it's at times I'd be like, I need this grounder right
so
now.
So he really throws like a two seamer and a sinker or something.
Yeah, it might be. It might be that. I don't know if that's what he's doing. I just remember myself. I knew how to manipulate a little bit more to get a swing over the ball.
Yeah,
but it's possible.
And you know, his curveball is nice at 81 miles an hour. With it, you know. The thing about Lodolo that is, I think, most interesting is that he's led by horizontal break on everything.
The
curveball has 8 inches less drop than your actual normal curveball, according to Savant, and has 3 inches more horizontal movement than your regular curveball. His slider, or I guess it might be his slider, I don't know what that thing is. The changeup has 4 inches more drop than regular, but also 4 inches more horizontal. In fact, all of his horizontal movements are basically 18 inches or more.
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, it's
a real sideways package. That's what worries me a little bit more than Hunter Green. It's like the traditional vertical package.
Right.
That so, we kind of know how to deal with, you know, a horizontal, just being so plus horizontally is in Lodolo's favor because it's a little bit different. Rarer.
Right. Well, yeah. Who would you say is the best comp for Lodolo? Because for me, there's one player that's pretty much standing out here.
Is it like a Sailish thing or something?
Yeah, it's got to be Sail, right? I mean, the curveball, sure, it has more of that. Two plane, I think. Actually, honestly, like the Sail slider and the Lodolo curveball gotta be pretty similar as far as, you know, 80 miles per hour and with that two plane movement. You also have I guess it was a sinker more for Sail, but even like the release and everything, it looks so similar. So much horizontal break for Sail. And the thing to me that Sail's missing now that he used to have in his heyday, sure, the velocity is more like 94, 95 now and not that 96, 97 where you could push it to like 99 or something. It's his changeup. And what has excited me a bit for Lodolo this year is that we are seeing whiffs in the changeup now. 30% swing strike around the changeup as opposed to 14 and 17 across his previous 2 years. That is super exciting. PLV loves it. It was a 4.8 before, now it's a 5.3. Which is really good. You want to see that for the number three pitch for Lodolo, and just gives him another option to keep guys off of just this heater, to be able to cheat inside and pull the bat in. Now you got to push it back away because that changeup is a huge, huge deal.
I'm a huge fan of them. Similar release points too. Lodolo's slightly higher. His vertical release points are around 5.6. And Sail is 5.
Okay.
But that's pretty, like, Sail used to be kind of a bit of a unicorn in baseball.
Sure, yeah.
And so Lodolo being that close, I think you're right. I think that's a good comp. Interestingly, Sail has outproduced his Stuff Plus. Historically.
Oh.
But I could, one thing that I couldn't tell about Sail and outproducing Stuff Plus is that I was only getting Stuff Plus from like the latter half of his career, like the super injured part of his career.
Right.
Right now, where he seems to be rejuvenated, Stuff Plus says he's got a 112 Stuff Plus and says he's great. But somehow Chris Sale, even in the moments in between when Stuff Plus didn't like him, was still getting the strikeouts.
Right.
So
I think it's like such a weird breaking ball. I think there's something to be said about the break of Sale's slider is just unique. It's really not anything that we see. It's like, it's kind of a sweeper. I've often said like Rich Hill's curveball has always been a sweeper, really. It was a curveball that grip that he threw from side. So essentially you take a curveball, which is normally 12-6, and you cast it down as you're getting all the topspin on it. But then because Hill didn't deliver the ball over the top, he delivered it completely sidearm, but his hand is the same. Now he's just doing it across his body, right? And that is a sweeper.
Yeah, Sale slider's a little bit more too much of a two-plane pitch.
Well, right, he gets the drop on top of it.
Yeah,
it's like, and it's like really weird to see that, you know?
It's
right,
curveball.
Exactly.
So it's Lodolo's curveball. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the difference in velocity between these two pitches is 2 miles per hour, right?
Yeah.
As far as
young Chris Sale, I mean, what are we talking about? We're talking about a young Chris Sale versus a young, like, what's Hunter Green? Who's his
comment? Hunter Green?
Cole? Oh, man. Like a Cole without the command?
Yeah.
Who's a Cole without the command? Like, who, you were talking about a vertical pitcher, a vertical power pitcher without great command.
Oh, gosh. See, I only remember the good ones, you know?
Oh, so you're in the Lodolo camp.
I'm in the, yeah, there you go. I mean, okay, hold on. If you want to go back to
Tyler, like, Glasnow, Hunter Green.
Yeah. I mean, I think with Glasnow, what was so interesting about him was Green does a better job of actually getting that thing upstairs, I think, than Glasnow did. And Glasnow also had so much extension that made that
Green
thing ridiculous,
that
you know?
Yeah.
And Green is below average when it comes to that, which has always been a weird knock for me on him. I mean, who's just like one of those guys? Oh, cool. It's like 99. Oh, man. No, that can't be it. I thought of like Yordano Ventura for a second. But
that's not bad. That's not bad. He didn't have the great extension.
But he didn't get strikeouts. And I think, honestly, if we look back at it, we would probably see...
Not great IVB or something?
I would say his attack angle was probably terrible.
Hmm.
And yeah, it was one of those things of like watching Yordano look so fun and so good. And then you're like, why isn't this returning any strikeouts? And
at least in like vibes, there's some comparison.
Yeah, vibes. There.
What Green would be doing in San Francisco, you know?
Oh, right. Yeah, not in Sin City.
Yeah.
That's my name for it because I just...
But Lodolo's, maybe Lodolo's horizontal package is a good package for Cincinnati. Maybe that'll allow him to you know, keep the homers down.
Right. Well, that hasn't been the case in the past, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the really big thing in these four starts is that's just 0.38 home per nine, which is essentially two of them.
But he's so small sample so far. Yeah. It's like you can't look at last year's 34 innings and say, two and a half homers per nine. Like that's
right.
That's what
1.13 in 2022. Homer fly ball rate then was 19%.
Yeah.
And I with Nick Lodolo, I've always considered him because he is that lower arm angle grouped in that Manaea, Sean Manaea and Andrew Heaney realm.
But he's better a little than bit. That.
And
he has a more.
Did really speak to like weird command with him. Sometimes his fastball is there and it's not. The changeup is there. It's not. The curveball hopefully is getting all these whiffs. And certainly Lodolo has benefited against the White Sox here, right?
But I would also chalk this up to just like inconsistent playing time. Like, doesn't he kind of strike you almost like a young player that struggled a little bit with incomplete playing time? Like on the hitting side,
it's
almost.
It's very possible. You need to be in a rhythm, especially if you are that horizontal, because it's just harder to figure out exactly how to get into the zone, right? So you need to get into that rhythm.
Yeah, like I definitely like Lodolo better than most projection systems. I mean, Steamer's pretty excited, so I'll take maybe Steamer, but
Steamer I'm in the Lodolo over Green train. I think mostly just because of the changeup. And the curveball is better than the slider for Green, but I'm going to say the four seamer is better for Green than it is Lodolo. Yeah, maybe.
Well,
it's pretty close.
Green's is more of the traditional.
Yeah, well, right, exactly.
For, you know,
but if Green had Lodolo's changeup, we would be in there.
If he could command a slider. If Green could command a slider, it'd be easy pick over Lodolo.
Yeah, right. I mean, that turns into the Strider 30%.
That becomes very much a Strider thing.
Yeah. Right. I mean, Jared Jones, Hunter Green, Christian Javier, honestly, was in that grouping for me. Even though it wasn't the same velocity, like the results were pretty much the same. It's really funny looking at Strider and Javier's 2022.
Yeah.
Because they're like the same.
Yeah.
With the results on the breakers and the strike rates and the and so on.
But then
so
Javier Velo just started bottoming out.
And he couldn't throw sliders for strikes anymore. Yeah. And I'm just so sad he's hurt right now because he has a changeup that actually helps. And I love Christian Javier with that. Now, someone else I did want to bring up with you because I don't know where you're at with him. And I feel like he's going to get more time now as he doesn't have a headshot on our player page. So, of course, it's my Brandeis baseball silhouette, believe it or not.
It's you?
Yeah, that's me. Right? And it's Spencer Arrighetti, otherwise known as the Pasta Pirate.
Yeah.
And I'm curious where you are on this because he's someone I think has a really flat fastball, 1.5 height adjusted VAA, which is so good. Negative 3.7 VAA. And I normally don't quote that because it's dependent on location. But understanding that it's a negative 3.7 VAA and that's 99th percentile is saying that he's making his four seamer as flat as possible as he's going upstairs a ton with it. 70% high lock at 94th percentile. And that's a 16% swing striker for Spencer Arrighetti's four seamer with a decent array of secondaries. Are you in on Arrighetti?
I don't think so.
What?
Arrighetti has a 70 stuff plus on his fastball for us. And I know
interesting.
I'm trying to look at, and we don't put VAA in as its own thing, but it should be capturing it because release point is hugely important. Extension is hugely important and vertical movement is hugely important. I will point to the fact that his vert at 16 is not good.
Yeah. We have it at 15 IVB.
Yeah. So I'm reading this off of Alex Chamberlain's at 16.
Alex, get it together. Even though we use the same formula, get it together.
I guess, you know, 10 inches horizontal means it's kind of two planey. That's not bad. 7.3 foot extension.
Yeah, 96th percentile
is good. And then 5.2 vertical release point is good. It's low.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. That's why it's at height adjusted VA of 1.5.
Theoretically, it should be good. I don't know. Oh, I do have something fun here. I forgot.
Oh, man. About Arrighetti?
No, I got my Owen McGrattan is my Kyle.
Oh, nice.
Hey, Owen. And he has a Shiny app. And I got him to upload the 2024 data in there new model. So I think I should have Spencer in here. Spencer Arrighetti. And there's his fastball stuff plus at 76 in here. Right now it says release speed and vertical movement exactly average. That's bad.
That's funny.
But now what else should I test? Because I can test.
I mean, we have actually a thing for PL Pro, that is yesterday's four seam fastballs that showcases these four attributes. I call it the Fantastic Four. So it's velo, extension, IVB, and HAVA. That's attack angle. And we have our temp PLV stuff plus, so we're not ready to fully announce and everything. We have it at 94.6 from those 58 thrown.
That would be a week ago from probably average-ish for a four-seam fastball.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, on that day, it's like the top, you know, 60th percentile or so on that day.
But I'm looking now taking into account those at things. Extension versus vertical movement. And yes, the extension's way out. But the vertical movement being average keeps it in a white bucket as opposed to red or blue. So if you just looked at him just on extension and vertical movement, you would call it an average fastball.
Right, right.
If you do vertical movement and horizontal movement, I think it's just the vertical movement, man. Every time I do vertical movement versus with any other thing, it just makes it average.
So I have a question for you.
I do have one other wrinkle with him I need to bring up, but yeah.
So this is to that point though. What do you have for Zach Wheeler's four seamer?
Do you think they're similar?
I don't know. I'm just maybe we'll get there.
96 stuff plus. So Not great on vertical movement.
Right.
Let me do extension. So you have, does he have great extension? Great extension, not great vertical movement. Let's do velo though. Isn't velo
is higher? 93 for Spencer already Getty, and it's like 95 for Wheeler, 95, 96.
So if I do attack,
yeah.
Oh, that's surprising though.
Yeah,
I do release angle. Speed against vertical movement, and he's still in the blue. Wheeler is.
Yeah.
How about release speed and extension gets him closer to red?
Right. And then his attack angle on Zach Wheeler's four seamer is pretty much the same as Ari Getty's too.
Oh yeah. I have a release point. So release Z plus extension. Still blue for Wheeler. Release speed versus release Z. Gets him pretty close to red. Man, so, I can't actually, that's a good point. Why does Wheeler have a 96 stuff plus? When he profiles similarly.
Well, here's the thing is that it, to me, what makes Wheeler so good with his four seamer, I mean, it's very flat, lots of extension, and he locates it upstairs.
And yeah, but the locating upstairs shouldn't be coming through on this right now. So,
well, right, it shouldn't be. Exactly. So that's my point though, is that there are certain guys that, when it comes to overall stuff, vert does matter. But when you pair it with location, understanding how flat it is, because being flat isn't necessarily good or bad, it's about where it's located, right?
Mm-hmm.
So being able to locate it upstairs effectively with that extension and flatness makes the vert less important.
I think Sky Kaltman's talked about like an idea of like, what if we had stuff plus in certain zones?
Yeah, right, sure.
Like certain pitches have a different stuff.
That's a great idea, Sky.
High in the zone versus low in the zone.
Right. And what I'm getting at here is that Wheeler does a phenomenal job locating this pitch upstairs.
Yeah.
And but Ari Getty has a 71% high lock so far.
Yeah. I think one part of the answer, though, I think velo is a big part of the answer. And this is why when I'm looking right now at, something like velo versus release point,
mm-hmm.
he's really close to red at his average velo, which yeah. means that he's throwing a fair amount in the red.
Sure.
Because he's throwing some of his fastballs at 95 and 95 right. and a half and 96. So if he was averaging 95, just his velo and release point alone would make him in the red Wheeler.
Yep. Yeah.
So right. you can't say that for Ari Getty, where if he's throwing 93, he's not throwing that many 95s.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. How much does that velocity change that and make it better?
The other part that's kind of interesting for me on Ari Getty is, so with cutters, we used to have cutters as breaking balls, and mm-hmm. And it made cutters worse in our, like it made,
right. It's just, why not throw a slider?
Made cutters noisier in our model.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It devalued cutters because they were worse than sliders. And it wasn't right. So we ended up putting in handedness, which helped cutters, because they're often a way for a right-hander to neutralize a left-hander and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And then we reclassified cutters as fastballs. And so now cutters are in our fastball model.
Right.
That helped the predictiveness of the model. It helped the model overall. It helped cutters overall. But it will hurt somebody like Spencer Ari Getty, I think. Because I don't think Spencer Ari Getty's cutter is a fastball for him.
Yeah, I mean, that's like an 88, 89 versus the 93, 94 of the four-seamer. 17% swing strike rate thus far. And how he's using it in at-bats, it is actually a really low early percentage, 18th percentile
for right? his cut. So that's yeah. a good example of like maybe it's a slider for him.
Right.
Another way that you might see that is that it has more vertical drop than your average cutter.
Oh, really?
That's a lot.
We have it as a 7.1 IVB, which is 52nd percentile. That's interesting. Okay.
Maybe Savant's is tied to velo. So
right. I mean, ours. I mean, Kyle has the whole formula.
Okay,
but it involves all that stuff.
I'm just saying, like, they're above average, below average is tied to
drop. Oh, sure, sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So maybe at 89, he has more drop than most 89-mile-an-hour cutters. It's only 0.6 inches, so we could still be talking about 48th percentile versus...
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah.
but I think the early and count thing is interesting. I don't know if we want to, like, use that in the model. What we could do is difference between the cutter and the four-seam fastball. He has 5 and 0.3 mile an hour difference between his four-seam and his cutter. I would assume that's slightly bigger than average.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I would say it's more like 3 or 4 traditionally.
Yeah, so I don't want to use usage to determine classification.
Right.
I don't think it's actually a really
I was thinking about this as you were talking about this. And I actually really want to go into all this stuff about how do we make models better and how do we classify. We're going to talk about that after this break. So I was, as you were talking about this before, about you label them cutters as a slider, or do you label it more as a fastball type, right? Mm-hmm. Can we define something based on zone rate or based on strike rate even? Like, and like usage in counts or something along the lines of how it's utilized.
But do you do that for any other pitch?
You could. You could say, like, is this a whiff curveball or is this an early curveball? You can do this as, is this a two strike four seamer? Or is this
again, we're doing this for the stuff plus, which is supposed to be kind of
neutral, right?
Supposed to be above all this.
But then why are you bucketing, right?
I'm thinking,
yeah,
bucket it in closeness and velo.
And just that's what you've been doing, right?
No, I told you we've just been putting cutters as not as four seamers but as fastballs, but maybe we could say anything within 3 miles is a cut fastball, and anything over 3 miles or over 3.5 is a cutter or a cut slider or whatever, you know,
right? Yeah.
You know, we might find something there. I think there are some other models that do something similar to that. So that's something for us to think about. When you look at Spencer Arrighetti's overall stuff plus on Fangraphs, you'll see a 68 and you'll be like, what the heck? And that's why I like that it has all the pitches next to it so that you can be like, what's this 14 on the cutter? And I think that that 14 is because it's classifying his cutter as a fastball. And so it's saying it's not a good one.
Right.
But if you classified it as a cutter, I bet you that jumps to 70, 80 at least. Mm-hmm. And then that makes his overall grouping of pitchings. To me, he strikes me as sort of a 90 to 95 stuff plus guy. And those guys can pop. I mean, it is a group of pitchers that sometimes undervalued, because I think that people think that 100 stuff plus is average for all pitchers. And that's not the case for starters. It's, you know, stuff plus is higher for relievers. So starters are like 95, 96, 97 in there. And so if you're a 92 stuff plus starter, like some people might, well, he doesn't have enough stuff plus. That is actually might be just a, like Ronald Blanco for us, 94 stuff plus starter. That's enough stuff.
Yeah, you need to put yourself in a position where then you could command your way into relevancy.
Yeah, exactly. And and somewhere around 92, 93 is like enough for me.
Yeah.
And I would assume that Arrighetti's pretty close to that. So I think a lot of it depends on command. It hasn't been great in all of his starts.
Right. No, that's certainly been the thing that really stuck out to me against the Cubs was, I mean, he had 12 whiffs on 58 four seamers. And that was because of his ultra affinity to go upstairs with that pitch. The other options, not that great. A lot of scatter shots of curveballs and sweepers, some cutters in there. And I think that's the biggest question mark to me at this point is, all right, how reliable is that kitchen sink to really pair with it? But to see him all of a sudden jump it up to 64% usage, which was about, I think it was, I want to say 40% four-seamer usage prior, 32%, 45%, and all of a sudden 64%. I don't know. It makes it kind of interesting for me. You see the Astros who haven't won many games and they should win more.
I mean, Fangraphs, you know, that they have some
5%.
They're moving away from stats and stuff, but they have some gotta have some organizational inertia when it comes to systems that were in place in terms of coaching towards stuff plus. So like,
definitely.
you know, and I would assume that if he got promoted, they don't have a 70 stuff plus on his fastball,
right?
Internally,
right?
So, they have Max Bay, who like created our
stuff. Who's that? Do you know him?
I wonder if you know our model is missing something on him. It's totally possible, and I do think our model is missing something on his cutter.
So you could look at his pitching plus, for example, and his
pitching plus is 99.
Oh, that's there you go.
So that suggests that his stuff plus at 68 might be wrong. Like pitching plus can look at each of these pitches again in a new light, basically.
Yeah. And also with Arrigetti, looks like the Astros are going to need him for a little longer as well. And you got to wonder too, if Arrigetti does well in his next start and Hunter Brown doesn't.
My other name. I'm going with the two Hunters today.
I had a perfect segue for you.
And the other one is Hunter Brown. And like, if you did not look at his results, if you just looked at his locations and stuff plus data, you would say there is no problem here. He has above average locations on the four seam, above average locations on the slider, and close enough to average locations on the cutter that you'd say he has three pitches he can command to some degree or another. And then you look at the stuff plus and you say, well, the stuff plus on the fastball is down, but at 91, that's not terrible for a starter. His slider is still 120 stuff plus, and the knuckle curve is still 139. It's always liked his curveball. And so you say, I don't really see a problem here. And then you flip over to his player page and you say, what the hell is going on? And the weirdest part for me is early on, the strikeout to walk ratio wasn't right. So you could say, okay, whatever stuff plus is saying, he's got more walks than strikeouts, or it's like a 1-to-1. He was 1-to-1 through four starts, basically.
Mm.
And so you can say that's not good. If you strike out as many as you're walking, you know, at some point you leave stuff plus behind and K minus BB becomes more predictive.
Right.
You know, because you're starting to get results. So you can say, oh, 1-to-1, that's bad. So right as you're about to give up on him, he has like a mediocre start against the Nationals with 6 strikeouts and 2 walks, 3 earns and 4 innings. And you're like, well, at least the strikeout to walk ratio is right. And then he goes out to get, and you say, well, maybe I'll start him against Cleveland because Cleveland's, you know, offense is not that great. And he gets 7 strikeouts and 2 walks. And you say, great, 2 homers against Cleveland?
Yeah.
6 earned and 5 1/3. Are you just giving up on him? Because I can't.
Oh, man.
I can't.
It's a command thing. And
man, it's not showing up in location plus. It's
constant inconsistency. I call him a cherry bomb. He's someone who I mean, if you watched, I'm sure you did, the destruction of the Kansas City Royals against Hunter Brown. It was hilarious.
Oh my God.
It was just the most hittable secondaries I've ever seen in the middle of the zone. And then you try to throw a fastball and it's just like wildly out of the zone. I am actually pretty sure that in our strike zones, we have dots that are missing because they're just outside of them. It was really, really bad. But
that was really, really bad for him even. Like, you know, that's...
He deserved all of the failure, which is so strange to see. Like, you see every pitch, it's just like, yeah, this is just... horrible pitch right down the middle, you know? So here's a splitter, middle, like, they just destroyed it. So then the next start after that, and this is against Atlanta, Hunter Brown did better with his four-seamer, but then just missed everything out of the zone with his second.
So he can only command one pitch a day.
Well, it's just like, he's terrified. Obviously. Like, I get that. You're like, hey, cool, I cannot throw it in the middle of the zone this time. Let's not do that. Okay, you're calibrating. Fine. And I would say the last two are better. Like against the Nationals, it was improvement. It was more four seamers that were around the zone. Cutters were in there. Splitters were a little more competitive. Still not quite there yet, but certainly better. And then against the Guardians, well, he would have these really good four seamers and then these really terrible ones. And he just went back and forth with it throughout the night. And this is the problem, I think, with Hunter Brown is, I remember even this last year, he didn't really know what his approach should be. There were times that I thought he was going to be the Zach Gallen approach, which is you throw four seamers low for called strikes and then you go underneath it with your secondary stuff.
Mm.
And then we saw him try to do that for a moment. And then he went to throw in, no, I have good vert now. It was 16 last year, 17 now on that four seamer, but you have a terrible steep attack angle. So you're thinking, hey, Blake Snell blueprint, let's go upstairs. I say, no, do the Zach Gallen method, go downstairs. And I just think his fastball is just a little too hittable, how he's using it right now. And he just doesn't trust his secondaries well enough. Like, it's just, does he have it today? Does he not? It's
I suppose too much. Having, like, you know, on again, off again command of a 91 stuff plus fastball is a big warning sign.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the secondaries are just not there either. You know, I would say his four seamers is his most reliable offering, but it's, you need to have this array, which is cutter, curveball, splitter, slider. Like, it's not like he doesn't know how to do these things. And last year, there was some success across the board here with curveballs and sliders, mostly the curveball. Rather the slider.
There's some element of, like, he hasn't been throwing this arsenal for that long.
Sure.
He added a lot of these pitches on his way up in the minors.
Mm-hmm. And he only really had one full season, Hunter Brown, in 2023. It was 156 innings.
And then there's some element that you're talking about, you've been talking about on this show for a while, which is that some of the shortcomings of Location Plus, where, you know, he has poor command. He's had, you know, 30 command grades coming up. And so it seems like his idea was to just have dominant stuff and just throw in the zone. And
right,
the stuff isn't quite dominant enough to do that. So, and then now, yeah, you're relying on him to have command outside of just in out the zone, you know, like,
right.
And the command to parts of the zone and stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's also, I mean, we saw it in what, 2022, those five starts or something like that with 30 innings or something along those lines. Like, oh man, Hunter Brown, nice K-minus walk rate. And even entering this year, we saw that too. I think his K-minus walk rate was like 20%. We're like, this is great. We're okay. Even though he was still figuring things out, he still got strikeouts. He didn't have too many walks. And I'm not, you know, I'm not out in the sense of, I think that Hunter Brown this from this point moving forward is necessarily going to be overall detrimental. He's just what I call a hipster, headache inducing pitcher stifling the entire roster. Mm-hmm. He's that guy that is just, are you really going to feel like Hunter Brown is going to do the same effective thing every time? No, you really don't know what you're going to get.
But what about, like, you know, and this is not your normal mode of analysis, but like keeper leagues, like,
yeah,
could he be a buy because there's still the parts there? He's kind of just like Edward Scissorhands, just kind of like,
sure,
trying to brush his teeth with razor sharp hands, you know what I mean? Like, at right, some point he'll, like, you know, figure out how to, like, pick up the toothbrush with the hands.
Anyway. I would probably. I mean, I generally do like seeing poor command guys that have five pitches. Yeah. I know that sounds weird.
Maybe stop throwing one or two of them. And
right. I mean, I had a whole thing for this. Don't become a jack of all trades or you're a master of none.
Yeah.
Like Jotman,
that's what he kind of,
like, it's the yeah, worst Pokemon ever, the Jotman. and you don't want to be that because
you can't dominate with any one thing. You don't have, right, like, well, you don't have that, like, you know, you don't have that thing where everything's going wrong. What can I do?
Right. I call it the leader pitch.
Yeah,
that's actually a weird thing about Cutter Crawford for me, is that he doesn't really have a leader. He doesn't have that one that's just like, no, this is it. This is my money pitch. I'm going in my back pocket and just throwing this thing.
I mean, it's not the cutter. It's named after.
It's not. It sometimes is. And then I thought, honestly, it was going to be the four seamer. Like, you know, so
he's another guy like Hunter where he's got great ride, but it's from a traditional release point that would create ride.
Right, right. But with Hunter, I think I'm in agreement that over time, yeah, it should be figured out. How much faith right now do we have in the Astros to figure that out? That's actually part of my ranking this year, was thinking, hey, look, there's this guy with K-minus walk rate. Astros, yeah, generally this gets better, but it hasn't.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because, you know, an organization is, its pitching coach is at the sort of the top in terms of the last line of defense. And so, you know, if you think they have a good pitching coach and they've had the same pitching coach, then you think that they should be able to figure it out.
I hope so.
changed pitching coaches, but not in the last like couple years, right? Like it was, what's his face that went to
Strom?
Strom left for the Diamondbacks.
Yeah.
But he left a while ago now.
Yeah. That's a lot. I have to admit, I need to be more well-versed in the names of pitching coaches.
So he left after the 2021 season. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that was also Hunter Brown's. Well, so, yeah, Hunter Brown debuted in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
He's had the same pitching coach. There are definitely some processes changing in the minors. I don't know how quickly you can lose it. I don't even know how quickly you can gain it. You know, are the Padres now good at developing pitchers because they have Ruben Niebla, who was the Guardians guy?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, my whole argument about were the Guardians good in the first place? Was it
right? You know what I've actually figured out, I think?
Yeah.
I think that one of the things that the Guardians are really good at is defensive placement.
Well, Kai Correa stuff you were saying.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we've been harping on this from like when you came down from for the Athletic podcast.
Yeah, I think that they're and game planning.
Yeah.
I think they might be really good at game planning.
Mm.
Because it is kind of hard when you look at Guardians pitchers to kind of connect the string and be like, this is why they're good.
Right. Well, you know, maybe that's what it is with the Dodgers.
They always have long routine. If you look back
BABIP
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, they had the best BABIP.
Right. Gonsolin was like a 206. I was like, this is so weird. He's not that good.
And I've gotten on, I've had like online arguments where they're like, no, Gonsolin's a BABIP suppressor. And I'm like, before you give it to the pitcher, just think about the fact that this organization has been number one in BABIP for so long.
The number of comments I would get every single week when I did the list and I didn't move up Gonsolin to like top 20 or something.
Oh my God.
I can't tell you.
If there was a BABIP suppressor, I would say, maybe Urias because he had the sweeper, like a kind of an OG-ish sweeper.
Sure.
And then maybe Kershaw because of his command. Because you can actually...
Well, yeah, that the Kershaw's command was just was something else. And I really can't express this enough, just how difficult it was for guys, really with the four-seamer being so well spotted and mixing that with the slider, it was just absolutely devastating to every single right-hander.
Yeah, like, and Gonsolin has neither of these things.
Right.
Gonsolin has poor command.
Right, and just a slider he throws in the zone, like, okay, hope so.
Yeah.
And then sometimes it's there and sometimes isn't, and then a fastball is just like, here you go.
Right, it's like there's nothing about Gonsolin that screamed he should have like a 220 BABIP.
Right. By the way, I haven't thought about Julio Urias for a while for good reason.
Yeah.
And I don't really enjoy looking at this now, but I am super curious about like, oh, yeah, right, how good was his fastball and stuff? Yeah, he had good invert, pretty average. Have a terrible extension.
I think it was the breaking ball. He found a breaking ball at some point that was pretty dominant.
Oh man, a 100th percentile horizontal break on the curve and 91st on the vert. So there you go.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a very interesting point about team context with defense and stuff. And I think we've considered that with the Astros too, which maybe has saved Framber Valdez because my gosh. That sinker is always a devastating thing to me of like, you should not be throwing so many against right-handers. And I have actually one more surprise name I do want to mention. I'm going to mention him after this break. So Eno, I know last year in September, we met up in San Francisco. We went to a game. It was a great time with a lot of people in the industry. And I remember someone mentioned Framber Valdez. We locked eyes and we said, where's the cutter? Where is this?
And then he was like, here it is.
But now it's a slider.
Oh, is
and
it?
He threw a slider out of nowhere. And I was like, no, we're mislabeling this. This must be the curveball. But no, different vertical break completely. He threw, he had 10 whiffs in Mexico City with a slider. And I'm like, does this mean you're not throwing sinkers to right-handers as much anymore? Is this like...
I think Savant went backwards. And
no.
Yes, Savant went backwards and started calling some pitches from 23 and 22 sliders. I think this
serious?
Is new. Yeah. Now
I don't have that updated yet.
Says that he threw 257 sliders last year.
I have it still as zero, so I haven't gotten that update sent to me yet through Sport Radar. So I,
So yeah, that so is it. I got it right. That's funny. I was like, I've never seen this slider before. I'm on his page right now, and it says he threw 257 last year.
No, we got nothing. And this was a 42% CSW, 25% swing strike rate. And oh my gosh, Framber, is this now like the thing we wanted the cutter to be? I sincerely hope so, because that sinker just traditionally is not a good pitch to throw against right-handers for Framber. It's always been the biggest question mark of, hey, can you get that whip underneath 110?
And so would he just against the lefties be slider curveball?
Lefties is fine. He jams them easily with the sinker, right? But now that I'm looking at it, sliders he threw 33% of the time against lefties. And I'm worried to see now that it was 0% against righties. Okay, 9%? Is that acceptable? Maybe? Oh, 27% changeups, though. So I'm that's the thing, is like last year it was 40%, 45 to 50% sinkers against righties. Now it's 40%. We're seeing changeups here. We're seeing some sliders.
I mean, he's like he's closer to being a true four-pitch pitcher against righties now, which I think is something we like for him, yes. Other than the fact that he does not have great natural command.
Right. So
but at least he,
I'm okay
in comparison to like Hunter Brown or something. You can't say he's a master of none. He still has the sinker.
Yeah.
He has a leader pitch. It's the sinker.
Right. Right. If he's like, okay, I just need to get this. He still gets all the ground balls with it. Yes. It is a 45%. That is the changeup I'm looking at. Actually, the changeup's not performing.
Changeup has a 462 slugging against this year.
Yeah. 45% ICR against righties this year so far. But PLV loves it more than ever. So, okay. he's not actually throwing it in the zone, which is interesting. 24% zone rate. So we're probably seeing a small sample of balls in play. Just 13 batters faced with it, 2 are strikeouts. So just 11 balls in play and 5 total ideal contact. So I think it's a pretty small sample to really judge that massively against right-handers so far. But Framber Valdez, to me, this is finally like, I guess, hey, I think we're maybe doing something that we really do trust.
Oh, he's not. He's not throwing the cutter this year. It is just the slider this year.
Yeah, get out of here. And that was, by the way, if you're saying, oh, the cutter is a slider, no. That was 85 miles per hour last year for Framber Valdez. This is 81, 82. And his curveball comes in at 80, 81. It's a lot different break as well. And you're seeing like 17 inches of drop on the curveball. You see 11 on the slider. You're seeing also two playing more with the curve. It's 12 inches horizontal, 6 on the slider. So
plus like the interesting. Better.
This is also weird, is that his extension on the slider is so bad. Everything else is like 6 feet. And then I see the slider is 5.2 against righties.
That is weird.
Although and especially looking at the extension side.
Extension too.
That's the extension side. That's what Hunter Brown said.
That's right.
What is that? That's wild.
It's just what he's used to. Happen? He's just not used to it.
Yeah, he's probably
cutting it off earlier.
Right. He's not staying behind it as long. That's very odd to me.
Normally you would stay connected to your breaking ball longer.
Right. Like if sometimes maybe the changeup, like you'll pronate early. Or something along those lines.
Right.
Or maybe you might supinate too far too quickly, but no, you want to stay through it as
like
long
his curveball has his most extension.
Right.
And his slider has his least. That is weird.
That is so strange. I mean, again, one game, Mexico City. And by the way, I just want to give a shout out to Petriello. Thank you. I yelled at you enough to have StatCast in Mexico City. And we got it. I thought I was going to get no data
see
here.
The horrors of what it does to pitch movements and.
Very true. The same time, I have things. I would not have known that he had a slider. I would just call it the curveball.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, Mike. We love you.
7,000 feet. Hopefully there's no permanent team ever instituted there.
Oh, man. That'd be absolutely something else. And no, we cannot make it a dome. A dome is not going to fix it, guys.
A pressurized dome.
No. Come, stop it. Creeping me out. All right.
Think about the butterflies.
That's going to do it for today with The Craft. You know, I can't thank you enough for joining me today on this episode. Is there anything you want to share with everybody that you're working on right now?
Oh, a Sonny Gray Evolution of His Breaking Balls piece I'm doing with Katie Wu. That's going to be fun.
Oh,
that
nice.
Be up tomorrow.
That's awesome. Definitely check that out. I remember there was some talk about him all of a sudden getting cameras in 2020 with the Reds or something. It's like get slow motion on a slider, and all of a sudden he started to do it. Yeah. I was like, this is amazing. Yeah.
And it's kind of fascinating because it also gets to like nomenclature, because he's like, oh, I didn't have a good slider in Oakland. He's like, the slider that was working for me. And you're like, what do you
wait, what?
You
hold on.
You didn't have a good slider. And it's like he kind of just like uses the words inner, like, so when he says it's not a sweeper, don't trust him. It's a lot easier to think of him as having a sweeper and a harder slider.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like,
otherwise, by the way, I love his voice. You won't
know what the word slider means anymore after a while.
Yeah, semantic satiation almost there too.
Yeah,
but I love Sonny Gray's voice too, which I'm sure you've heard by now. And then that's awesome. Look forward to that. And of course, I did get approved for credentials, so I'm going to be talking to James in time today, which I'm just so excited
about.
All right. I'll put that actually on this podcast, guys, as my interview with Tyone. So look out for that later this week. But that is it. So, thank you so much for being here. My name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk about the craft again next week.